All right, ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening to the podcast feed, we are just getting the YouTube live feed set up, and I believe we are set to go. We are live on YouTube. Let me just get the link going. Link out there. Of course, the internet decides to be slow today.
Whenever you want it to work.
Yeah, usually. Okay, that's that. We're gonna go here, gonna paste, we're gonna post, and we
All right.
are live.
All right.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Squared Circle News. I am Vinny, and my special guest this week is Matt from 10th Floor Podcasts.
Hi.
Matt, how are you today?
I'm great. I'm great. Thanks for having me. Thanks for inviting me here to the Squared Circle.
Absolutely, no. It's good to have you here. It's always good to talk to people that do like soap operas and wrestling because, as you know, I do like both, and the genres are very similar.
It's very fun to see the similarities. I find it's a little easier to apply wrestling to soaps than soaps to wrestling, but
Yes.
I totally get it.
Yeah, no, absolutely right. Although I will say that I do go ahead and use a lot of wrestling terminology when it comes to
Yeah.
so talking about the
Well,
soap.
I'm guilty of making the reference on the 10th Floor podcast too. So,
Yeah.
I don't blame you on that. And I remember a long time ago something that one of the first things that we talked about was when I noticed, your connection between, because at the time you're doing Suds and the Squared Circle at the same time in the same broadcast. And I'm like, you need to assign champions, man. You need to pick like a women's champion on GH and stuff.
Yep. It's true. No, it really is true. And it's funny because we've had so many, they don't do as many fights as they used to do.
No.
On General Hospital, but we did have a small sort of cat fight with Trina and Esme a
Right.
couple weeks back on the boat in France. So I mean that was cool. I wish I had the sound clip of Joey Styles yelling cat
Oh
fight.
my God. Cat fight.
But either way, so we are here. We're gonna be talking about a lot of stuff to get into
Yeah.
some current wrestling stuff. We'll get into some, we're going to be talking about a WWE Hall of Famer that I've never been a really huge fan of, Bret Hart. That's, it is what it is with me. It's like I could recognize Bret Hart, his, athleticism in the ring. But I've never been a huge fan of his, and it might be more of a timing thing for me.
I think that's probably what it is. I mean, my guest spot here on Suds is because you had said something. Bret Hart had talked about the Vince McMahon scandal in some way, and you said, "Oh, for the first time, he makes sense," or something of the like. And I'm like, "Vinny, of all people, doesn't with Bret?" And so I had to ask about it, of course.
Well, I here's the thing is that I obviously came up as a big Hulk Hogan fan, Hulkamaniac through and through. And he was at in 90, in the early 90s when he was leaving WWE, and he left after WrestleMania 8, and then came back for the road to WrestleMania, which wasn't called that at the time. He
Right.
came back at WrestleMania, for WrestleMania 9 to team with Brutus and the Mega Maniacs, and then at the end of the show, coming out and beating Yokozuna for the world title when Bret had lost to him previously.
Yes, Bret just lost to
Right.
Yokozuna. Two and a half minutes later, Hulk Hogan has the championship over his head once again.
Yes, exactly. And then going through and King of the Ring, Hogan losing, and then going off to WCW a year later. But that's the thing. It's like I went from being a Hulk Hogan fan to then Lex Luger because he came in as came in as a narcissist, but then on the Intrepid came in as the All-American and
So
the
you just kept on falling for the patriotism.
yes.
You don't like Brett because he's Canadian. I get
No, it's not the Canadian thing, but
it.
although it's like I think my biggest thing is like I was always a fan of the big muscle guys, Hulk Hogan, Lex Luger, And then Bret Hart, who was a fantastic baby face, he just couldn't, he was never a big good talker until later on during the Attitude Era. So I think that's
I'll
what
give you that.
I think that's what kind of did it for me, was that he just, it's just a timing thing. He wanted to fill Hogan's shoes, but, and again, I was hoping Lex came out of WrestleMania 10
But
as the world champion, not Bret.
you liked Lex. You
Yes.
liked that turncoat, the one that just strolled out on Nitro and the Great American Mall or whatever it was.
Yep. The Mall of America.
Oh my gosh. I get it. I get it. I was still a kid, a little kid during these times. I'm born in 86. And
Okay.
so by the time,
I was born in 81,
WrestleMania
so
9 was around, I was
yeah.
10 years old, if even that.
Right.
So when it comes down to it, I have a lot of fond memories of enjoying Bret Hart because I didn't miss it like you did. It wasn't a lack of timing on my end. And then going back, after our little discussion and just picking up a little bit of things here and there on Peacock, I'm reminded of how much of a hero this guy really was. He didn't have the biggest pops in the world. He didn't get the crowd all rowdy like The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin were able to do. But when it came to like believing in this man's ability to fight through the odds and earn his way to a championship belt, you believed it.
Oh
You
yeah.
believed it every time he stepped in the ring.
Yeah, and
And
he was a
yeah.
consistent underdog. So I mean, because think about it. Being, a smaller statured guy to, 234 pounds against somebody like Yokozuna, 600 pounds, definitely an underdog there. But the what it was is that he was more of a technical wrestler. He wasn't
Oh,
a
absolutely.
guy.
Yes, I mean, master of the ring, master of ring psychology as well.
Absolutely.
So, I guess the type of fan that you are has something to do with it as well. If you're into the Flash, Jeff Hardy style stuff, then maybe Bret Hart isn't going to check those boxes for you.
Right. Yeah,
So
and then
but a master of ring psychology, everything was built around telling a story and
you're
a
right.
back and forth and I'm going after this. Oh no, you caught me and now I can't. Wily tricks from the heel to get over on Brett, who was just so technically capable that there was no way to beat him but to cheat. All of that just led into great, compelling, memorable stories, which, I mean, I don't watch a whole lot of wrestling nowadays, but I feel like in the limited amount of wrestling I have been watching lately, it's not the same when it comes to the dramatics of what you see in the ring.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. It's funny because the guys of today, there's very little psychology, because a lot of the guys, I think what it is, a lot of the guys go for the pops, the high spots, the table spots, and it doesn't even have to be necessarily foreign objects or ladders or tables or whatever. But it comes down to the point where they're going for the big moves, the big, whatever, whether, in a four corners tag team match, when you have all eight guys up on the turnbuckle and then you see the multiple power bomb, suplex, superplex type thing, they're going for those flashy spots rather than, the headlock takeover because you're trying to wear them down, or, I'm doing this move not because I have to, but because I want to,
You definitely see those super spot fests over on the AEW side of things, I think a little more often than WWE. But even in WWE, I can't say that there's a whole lot of psychology that's left in those matches
Right.
either. I remember even as an adult, and I guess peeling the curtain back and doing my own little wrestling career and learning how it's supposed to be done, quote unquote, so to speak. I did really start to notice as an adult too, just the diminished quality by the time we were getting into the tens,
Yeah.
the 11s, the 12s, maybe even a little bit before then, because I remember commenting one night watching Monday Night Raw with my friends, like, I can't remember the last time a match started with a lockup.
Yeah.
The bell would ring and we would start just throwing punches immediately, just back and forth, punch to the corner, we're gonna whip, we're gonna start doing our back body drops. And I'm like, this is not what I used to watch. And I'm not, I sound like a cranky old man. I'm not complaining. It's the truth.
Yeah. No, you're exactly right. And the thing is when you're listening to a lot of especially the podcasts that are out now with whether it's Eric Bischoff or Jim Cornette or Bruce Pritchard or any of the other, former wrestlers slash wrestling personalities, they'll tell you the same thing. It's there's a lack of storytelling, there's a lack of psychology. It's again, it's so fast paced. You're getting away, moving away from the professional wrestling aspect of professional wrestling. Yes, it's sports entertainment. Yes, it's flashy storytelling, predetermined, whatever you want to call it. But it's, you're moving away from the wrestling grappling part of it and just moving into the
Just the
athleticism,
show entertaining
showy style.
part, where everybody's doing their thing. It's I don't know, maybe we can liken it a little bit more to like Luchador or AAA or something like that, where it's very, very much about the acrobatics that you see. There's stories, there's promos, there's characters, but when it comes down to it, you can't follow those rules of a tag team match. It's pretty much about, whoever's in the ring right now, let's get our thing in. Switch out. We don't need tags. So long
Don't
as we
need
leave
tags.
the ring, somebody else can come in. We'll structure some sort of skeleton around it, but we're just it's a free for all.
Exactly. No, you're exactly right.
So I mean, I it's valid. It's a way of doing it. But it's not the way that I guess I learned it. I
Yeah,
don't know. I don't know what to
it's
say, because
not like the
I don't want
American
people to
style
walk
here.
away from this thing thinking that I'm like saying, oh, it's terrible, it's trash, everybody should turn it off and never give it your time, because I don't care. You can do that if you want to.
I will say the WWE is, in terms of what's on TV, is running on a current high right now. With their storytelling, especially of the Bloodline story, with the main event storyline of The Rock, Roman Reigns, Cody Rhodes, Seth Rollins, and anybody else who's in that story, it's kicking on all cylinders right now.
And yeah, I guess that goes to show, when you actually do have a little bit of good storytelling and psychology in there, people are going to flock to it and really like it.
Yes.
And we're getting that with it. I couldn't tell you anything else that's going on in the show right now, of course, which I think, means that they've done what they wanted.
Yeah.
The people who are either tangentially interested or remotely connected know what has happened.
Right.
I couldn't tell you anything about Gunther. I know that he's got the Intercontinental Championship and has for a long time. I don't know what the New Day's up to. I don't know why that Scottish guy who was once the future, and I guess in just the present now. I don't care. I don't know what he cares about. I couldn't get into the details of that.
Right.
But Cody Rhodes stepping out on that stage and saying that this is some BS was pretty good stuff.
It was great. And even the way they did it afterwards with The Rock and Roman Reigns walking out and going after going to Triple H and The Rock saying, "Fix it," or I'll knock his teeth down his throat, and the fact that it really created a lot of emotion, even for somebody that's watched wrestling for years, and it's one of those things where you learn about, oh, well, this story is going this way, or tend to be almost like General Hospital, where it's predictable about where something's going. But for somebody like that to say, oh, damn, there's really something cooking here. Which way are they going to go? And there's so much, I don't want to say controversy, that's the wrong thing, but so much misdirection in the dirt sheets, like Dave Meltzer and everything.
Well, I mean, he'll just publish the first thing that comes. There's no validation there at all when it comes to any of the information he comes across. He's just going to print whatever somebody sends him.
Exactly. But for a lot of the people, for a lot of the people that cover it, even the reputable journalists like Sean Ross Sapp or Ryan Satin or any of those Raj Geary that are in the know or have their sources, whatever. There's still a lot of debate whether this was the original plan to go with Cody and go back and forth, or did they
See,
pivot?
and this is why we can't have realism in wrestling anymore.
Right.
This is the reason why wrestling isn't the same as when I was a kid, is because nobody gives it a chance to just be what it is. We have
You're
to
right.
figure out, well, was this a plan? Did they change it? Was this the whole thing? Did he sign in his deal that he had to main event WrestleMania? If he did, what a dick. Like, where people are so wrapped up in all of those details that they're not able to really just enjoy the story that's being told. I remember putting on Twitter a couple of weeks ago, and it applies to soap operas as well. people are no longer asking themselves, why is a character doing this? And now they're asking themselves, why are they making the character do this? And that just completely changes how you
How
are
you view it.
entertained by your entertainment.
You're exactly right. That's what it boils down to. Before I get any further, go ahead if you're watching. Thank you so much for watching or listening. Give us a like, subscribe, get notified. Definitely help us get our subscriber totals up. We're at 49 subscribers right now. We got to get to that 300.
Such an easy click, and it really it changes nothing other than you see the videos and don't have to look for them. Just do it.
Exactly. And if you're listening on the podcast, go ahead, give us a 5-star Apple review or Spotify or anywhere else you find your favorite podcast and you're listening to us on. Also, as I've said before, if you're wanting to get a really great I'm a Paul Heyman guy shirt like I'm wearing now, go over. We are an official affiliate of the WWE shop. So go to sudsandsquarecircle.com/wrestlingmerch. That brings you to WWE shop with our affiliate code, and I do get commission based off your purchases. Go over. They also do have that sweet Super Bowl championship belt for the Kansas City Chiefs that just recently there. So
You're a
go
wrestling
ahead.
fan and plan on going there anyway, might as well just use the Suds and the Squared Circle link.
Yes, absolutely. And help us out. But anywho, just kind of moving back to what we were talking about. It does, because a lot we know that whether it's wrestling or soap operas, it's written by a team of writers. And there's so many people like, oh, why are the writers writing this character one way or another? You know, and again, yes, a lot of the writers have the blame when it comes to certain things, but why question it, right? You know, again, why, like you said, nobody's asking why a character is doing something. Why are they making the character? Why are they writing the character this way?
It's such a thing. It's such a thing too, because I can't deny that thinking. It's not like I don't do that thinking. I have a podcast. Of course I've done that thinking.
Exactly.
I've done that sort of thinking my entire life. I just haven't had anywhere to put it like we do nowadays here on the internet. It's great that people are passionate. It's great that they would, are in this position of, well, if I could do it, this is what I would do. Because these sorts of achievements and jobs and ways of getting into something you love, like wrestling, have never been more accessible than they are today. So it's great, but the missing portion, I think, is the active pursuit of doing it. I think that that's the key factor when it comes to ripping something apart. You have to try to do it yourself in some way. That's part of the reason why we're very positive on our 10th floor podcast about General Hospital, is because we're not making the show. We have no idea what it takes to make the show. We talked to Fido Xavier a couple of times as a director on it, and that is the closest we've gotten to any sort of understanding of what life is like behind that camera. So we're not qualified to rip it apart. We can talk about the things that we liked, and that's kind of how we approach things. I think that that's sort of missing a little bit in a lot of the internet wrestling community. But it is what it is. People have comments. Ultimately, my big question to them is, planned or not, is it good?
Is it eliciting an emotional response from you? I agree. That's what it comes down to, is it causing you to want to tune in to find out what happens next? And I remember this quote, the movie, I can't remember the name of it, but it was the Private Parts about Howard Stern. And there was a quote in there that said, the people that like it are listening because they like it. The people that hate it are listening because they want to see what he's going to say next. And that's what it comes down to, is like, I've never been the kind of person to like the hate watching something, you know, watching something and complaining about everything. I mean, if that's your job, you have a pretty miserable life. But at the same time, it's like that's your choice. And
Critic used to be a job.
you know, and again, it's like, why go ahead and always complain? Find something you like and comment about it. Or, you know, if you really are not liking anything, go ahead and start sending messages to the, you know, to the people in charge.
It's also valid to like to navigate what you love through what you don't like about it. This is something I learned from a close friend of mine that I've met 15 years ago now, because it didn't matter what big comic book fan, and it didn't matter what they did on a TV show or a movie or anything. He absolutely hated every moment of everything that came out. But that is how he was navigating something that he loved, was
Right.
comparing it to its origin and disliking the new stuff. But he was still engaging with his passion. The thing that makes that situation different versus, I think, some of the commentary that we're talking about is he never encouraged somebody to not like it with him.
Right.
He just didn't like it himself. But
Yeah.
he never would. How could you possibly
Right.
believe that this is good? How could you possibly waste your time on this? How could you possibly think that this is good? He never did that.
Right, yeah.
So I think that's also a key factor, you know, just
Is.
don't harsh somebody's buzz, man. If they're liking it, let them like it.
Yeah, no, exactly.
I've always liked, I've never been the biggest fan of the biggest stars. I couldn't care less about Batista. I couldn't care less about Randy Orton. I had a lot of love for Hulk Hogan. I was a little kid. I enjoyed Shawn Michaels. I enjoyed Ric Flair. Don't have much of an opinion on Chris Jericho, you know, because my favorite wrestlers were Dolph Ziggler, were The Hurricane, were Santino Marella. Were all of these people who weren't the biggest stars on the roster were the ones that kept me watching.
Yeah, and I
Even
get
on the
that.
ladies' side of things, Nydia. Oh, Nydia was amazing. I even liked Candice. What was her name? Candice something.
Candice Michelle.
Yes. She had such major improvement. You know, if you watched her over the years, she went from simple model eye candy to somebody who actually was capable in the ring. And I know that
With a
Trish gets a
lot
lot
of
of
women.
applause for her growth and being, you know, the diva of the century and all that kind of stuff that they've given her. Candice Michelle, I think, was right on her tails when it comes to just overall taking to the game.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, if you look at that era of, especially of the women, you had Trish Stratus, you had Tori Wilson, Stacy Keibler, Candice Michelle came in at that point in time. Lita was one of Lita was different because she came in as a wrestler, but out of those other four, they were mainly managers, models, what have you, before actually learning to wrestle and getting in the ring. Trish Stratus is an icon. She picked it up like crazy. Tori Wilson was fantastic, and Stacy Keibler had her moments, although she wasn't a great in-ring talent, but she was still really good.
A big fan of Jacqueline and Victoria as well. I mean, really, when it comes down to it, I'm very much a like 96, 97 kind of guy. It really was like before the screw job type of era, and then everything changed after that. That's when they really leaned into attitude. And of course, I watched it every single week. I was invested. But when it comes to like looking back and reflecting on that era, I don't really do that. I reflect on times just before it and definitely times afterward, because that's when I was in high school. I was in high school during the Alliance and the aftermath and the blended roster and the brand split. The what do they call it? The ruthless aggression era.
The ruthless aggression era.
So I was in high school in that time. So again, that's another like time in which someone would be more invested. You know, if you're 46 years old and just trying to capture that feeling of when you were watching wrestling when you were 17, it's not going to happen because you're not in that demographic of imagination and make believe anymore.
Right. No, you're exactly right. That's why the question always comes up, and listening to some of Conrad Thompson's podcast, it's the same thing. He's my age. So it's the same situation where you're thinking, oh yeah, you liked ECW. ECW was great back then. Looking at it now, it's really not that great. Like at the time, yes, a lot of weapons, a lot of violence, a lot of blood and guts, and yeah, that was great for the time. It had its time, but now it's like I want more storytelling.
And there's this other show on YouTube called Reliving the War. It's on the Wrestling Bios channel. They're not competing with you, so I don't mind sharing the channel out there. But they do the Reliving the War, and every Thursday they do a Raw and Nitro comparison. And I find myself so often waiting a little longer and waiting a little longer and waiting a little longer to watch it when it used to be like must see Thursday at noon for me, television, YouTube television. And it's not the case anymore because the content, the years, what they're covering is the Ministry of Darkness, the corporate ministry, the complete and utter collapse of WCW is happening right now. And it's just like not fun to remember as much as the early stuff.
I can
The
understand that.
96, 97 free screw job era.
Well,
And it's just so weird that you can point to that moment as like, you know, I think Bret Hart said it or somebody else did on Dark Side of the Ring that the Montreal screw job was when wrestling lost its innocence entirely.
I think you're right. And that makes total sense. And going back to the screw job, it's like obviously we're talking, we've been talking about Bret Hart and everything. And here's the thing, and I think the problem is that the Montreal screw job itself, it completely killed kayfabe. Now, granted, Vince came out back in the 80s to say wrestling was scripted because he didn't want to pay taxes in New Jersey based on sports, and be, have have that whole thing. But when it comes down to it, there's still a lot of people that, a lot of kids at the time and a lot of, people that still suspended disbelief because of a lot of the because the screw job was based upon backstage politics and backstage stuff. That's and I think that's right. That's what killed the innocence of it, because you either believed, okay, well, why don't you just let Brett win in Canada and lose the next night on Raw? But then it's like, okay, well, you're going to have more people paying to watch a pay-per-view, give them the title switch, whether or not it's in Canada. And, that's what Brett should have done to do business. And it's going to be debated till the end of time.
I mean, if you want to, you know, boil it down to just its bolt, yes, he should have done business. If you just want to boil it down to its absolute most basic, you know, determination of events. But there was so much leading up to all of that, years really leading up to that moment, that there's just so much more to consider than he just should have done it. I'm personally camp reject. I'm not going to do it because I'm a Canadian hero. And pro, I said I'm not going to do it because I'm a Canadian hero because F. Shawn Michaels. You know, just given the, another example of what we just talked about earlier when he lost the belt to Yokozuna, gave it to Hulk Hogan. He's been on record plenty of times saying that he didn't like it, he didn't agree with it, but ultimately he played ball, he did business, he did what was asked of him, but not.
And again, he's come out and said he played ball and did that because he was assured by Vince that it would be Hogan and Brett at SummerSlam for the world
And then
title.
Hogan did his normal thing where he squirrels out of stuff.
And Hogan says that that wasn't the case, or whatever the case, whatever the case may be.
You know, I mean, really, when it comes down to Vince McMahon, you know, he either has lied to you or hasn't at the same time, and you're never going to find out until you find out.
And he's the only one that can say yes or no to it. He
Right.
I remember a segment on Monday Night Raw where it was Paul Heyman and Vince McMahon in the ring, and Paul said, "I'm a promoter, you're a promoter. I've lied through my teeth every single day of my life to get to the next day. And you know what? You have too. And you can't say you haven't." And it sort of boils down to being a promoter. So, there's all these stories that come out, and Bruce Pritchard, I love the show and I love the guy, but there are many times where he'll say, "Oh yeah, well, Vince never said I'm going to promise you the title. He always said I could see you as a world champion, or I could see you this," and people misinterpret it. Bruce Pritchard will always go down as a Vince McMahon sympathizer,
Oh yeah.
regardless of the current situation, whether or not he knew,
I
that's
mean, you
an
can't
address.
do what he has done without a lot of friends.
But it does boil down to the fact of when Bret Hart came in and said, I'm not willing to put Shawn Michaels over, especially, and I think the from if I remember correctly from the Dark Side of the Ring episode was he went to Shawn, and Brett told Sean, oh, I'm going to go ahead and do the job for you or whatever. And Sean said, oh, well, I wouldn't even, I won't do that, do the same
Wouldn't
for
do it
you.
for you.
Right. So that's what kind of made Brett say, nope, I'm not going to do the job for him, especially in Canada and so on and so forth. So the bigger debate is, was it a work? What
Well,
was it?
there's the thing, because the big thing that's hanging on all of it is one fun little phrase that comes up so much more when it comes to Hulk Hogan than it does Bret Hart. The creative control clause.
Yes. Created, yeah. The creative control part of it is Bret Hart supposedly had creative control for the last 30 days of his contract. So on his way out, he can approve or deny any creative that was, gonna be happening for his character. Creative control for Hulk Hogan on the WCW side was the same thing, where there's, now many people say, oh, there are so many people that had creative control in WCW.
It was just Hogan.
It was just Hogan, maybe Brett,
And
Eric
I think it was
Bischoff.
less, I think creative control is too much of a broad term as well. I think it was control over endings of matches.
Yes. Yes.
Not necessarily this is the story I'm playing, but if you're sticking me in the ring with Horace Hogan and you have him going over, I'm going to say no,
Right.
it's me instead.
Yes. And honestly, the biggest the biggest flop to that was Starrcade '97 with the ending of Hogan and Sting, which of course
Sting
did
didn't have a
Bret
tan. What can we say? He didn't have a tan.
Hart. Right, yeah.
No, Bischoff further explains that because he could sound bit for the he didn't have a tan thing, but like it was just one of many examples of Steve Borden not walking into the arena showing, I'm
Yeah,
your
that he was
guy.
ready.
Yeah. I mean, that's his point of view on things.
Right.
I wasn't there. I
Exactly.
didn't see it. I watched it on pay-per-view and had a great time. That was the wonder of WCW. It's not for its rewatchability. It's for its one-time watchability live as it was going through.
Yes. Yep, exactly. So the biggest controversy is when at the at the ending, when Hogan goes to pin Sting. Nick Patrick counts the three. It looked like a normal count, and Brett came in and said, this
Yeah,
isn't
it's
gonna
supposed to be
happen
the quick
again.
count.
Fast count, right? Because the original thing was supposed to be a fast count. Then Hogan went to Nick Patrick and said, no, it's gonna be a regular count. We're gonna just go with me keeping the title. But then it apparently got changed, and there was so much miscommunication. Brett comes in, restarts the match. He was there as a referee that night. Sting puts on a Scorpion Deathlock. Hogan submits. There's a championship match. So it was evident there, but that was more miscommunication.
Yeah, that was Nick Patrick blowing it, essentially, is what that comes down to. I appreciate the idea. I know that Bischoff has since said, if I could go back and do it again, I'd have Bret Hart wrestle his first night, not referee. Mistake of mine, I was young and dumb, what can I say? I think people should give Eric Bischoff that. He was young and dumb. Okay. Look at who he surrounded himself with. They weren't giving him the best ideas, okay?
Exactly.
But I can appreciate the idea of this just happened to me a couple of weeks ago where somebody got screwed by a crooked ref. I'm not going to allow that to happen again. And if a quick count had happened, the moment would have been sold better.
Right.
That's for sure.
Yes.
It still wasn't the best way to use him post all of that Survivor Series stuff. But then also at the same time, if this was a giant work, if this was Bret Hart's whole idea or he was behind it all, as a way to continue to support WWF while making WCW money.
Yeah.
Nobody has ever gone out and said that. I don't get much from the stories that people say about that night.
Yeah.
But also at the same time, Bret Hart's story is almost exactly the same.
Yes.
Like he memorized it.
Another thing is, so here's one thing that I've come to the conclusion of is that I'm not going to worry about. I'm somebody that's always been able to split the character from the actor. And it goes the same for wrestling. When it comes to like the or should I say the person portraying the character.
Right.
I'm gonna enjoy, Batista matches, even though I don't agree with his personal feelings on certain things. And it goes again with the same thing with General Hospital actors. And I can like the Alexis character, and I may not agree with Nancy Lee Grand because she's so outspoken about certain things. So as a matter of fact, she's got me blocked on Twix. So
cares? You know.
but the thing is like when it comes down to certain things is that we have to be able to look through things. Scott Hall was a big, Scott Hall was a big advocate saying that it was that the Montreal Screwjob was a work,
Oh,
that
yes,
Bret and Vince
absolutely.
were in on it and everything because of the whole, WCW being, drawing the air.
And he doesn't even talk creative control either. He's like, R really, really big, huge pay-per-view, millions of dollars on the line. They're never going to cut the camera from the guy spitting at the dude. They're never going to turn off Bret Hart's mic. You know, like, now that to me, that was pretty convincing. All right.
Yes.
What does Scott Hall have to gain?
Right.
You know?
Yes, exactly. Which actually, Scott Hall, Razor Ramon, is one of the legends getting a biography on A&E this upcoming season,
Oh, how nice.
which
How
will be
nice. You know, I remember it's so weird because I think Razor Ramon was just outside my age bracket. Just like
fantastic. Yeah.
just outside. I remember him, of course, but I was never taken by Razor Ramon. And then things got so spotty with his schedule in WCW that there was really not much to invest in long term with him there.
Yeah.
And so he was one of those like mainstay wrestlers that had always been a presence in my viewing that I never really like attached to.
Right.
But I know that's not the case for other people. I know there's a lot of really big Scott Hall fans out there. And there's no
I'm
denying
one of
when it
them.
came down to it, he was kind of the workhorse of the NWO.
Yes, he was.
So.
Yep. And that's the thing. And it does. It comes down to where you were at the time that they were active. Obviously Razor Ramon coming into the WWE in 92, and then leaving in 96, going to WCW. That was when I was my sixth grade, seventh, eighth, into high school during that point in time.
Yeah.
The NWO era, the Monday Night War era, for the most part, was when I was in high school from 96, 90, fall 95 to 99. So, that was all then. That was. And that's why it was like I was a big, huge NWO fan. I still am. I still wear the merchandise. I still
Oh, NWO was, I mean,
got
in 96,
my
97,
phone case
NWO.
of NWO,
Let's be specific here. Those first 2 years, NWO.
Yeah, exactly. Before they watered it down and everything. Although I do have my Wolfpack memorabilia too, but
Then again, and you know, hindsight is 20/20 on that as well. If the network had allowed him to split the roster between two shows, the NW, you know, like there was a reason, there was a plan, there was a goal behind making it so large. They just weren't able to finish it, which
Right.
ultimately just, I mean, that in Thunder decision is pretty much one of like the nail, if not the first.
Yes. It was one of the nails in the coffin. And and Eric Bischoff was in a very bad spot at that point in time. The best book I've recommended numerous times is if you read the book Nitro, The Incredible Rise and Inevitable Fall of Ted Turner's WCW, written by Guy Evans. I've interviewed Guy Evans a few times on this show, but if you go and read that book, it is absolutely the best telling of what WCW went through and what Eric Bischoff went through at the time, between backstage politics, the fact that nobody at Turner outside of Ted himself wanted wrestling on their networks,
Right.
and then the parade of people coming in that had no business being in the wrestling industry, it made it just that much more difficult. When you're going to tell a wrestling company that I want to see your script 6 months in advance, that just can't happen because
I
you
have
need
no
to
idea
have a
who's going to be hurt 6 months from now, or who's going to be hot, who's going to be cold, who's going to run their course.
You could have a general bullet-pointed area saying, we're planning on, because that's how they used to book the WWF was, here are your WrestleMania matches, let's build back from them.
Yeah, I mean, you could
But
have a
that's a
general
rough outline.
idea. Where you want to go. I mean, that's a very television way of going about things. Like, I could tell you over on ABC General Hospital, the ABC, the network, has an idea of what GH wants to do 6 months from now, because that's how far out they have their rough idea. They don't have scripts for ABC to approve, but ABC has an outline of what they're planning on doing for months and months and months and months and months.
Yes.
What that resembles ultimately when it comes time to produce whatever it is that they have on their agenda, who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? Everything is always changing. But yeah, that's a very TV like show way of going about things. And when it comes down to it, we all know, I don't need to explain it to the listeners. Live wrestling is not traditional television. Even with the scripts that they give them nowadays, man, it didn't, you can give anybody a live microphone, right?
Yeah.
Who knows what they're going to say?
Exactly. All right. So kind of moving off a little bit, moving off of Bret Hart and stuff. One thing I do want to bring up and go over is as everyone knows, a dark cloud that's hanging over the WWE right now with Vince McMahon's scandals.
TKO WWE is doing backflips over this Cody Rock storyline because boy, oh boy.
Yes, I mean, let me put it to you this way, is that the fact that a lot of mainstream media is picking up on The Rock, Roman Reigns, Cody Rhodes, and everything on that storyline is fantastic news for TKO and WWE, because that kind of, and I don't want to put it on the back burner, I don't want to make it seem that it's minimized, but the fact is that there's still a dark cloud of the Vince McMahon scandal and the lawsuit claiming sexual harassment, sex trafficking, as well as some more information coming out. And there's just more information coming out. First of all, John Laurinaitis, through his attorney, Edward Brennan from Tampa, Florida, has been, has basically turned on Vince, saying he's a victim as well as Ms. Grant, the one who filed the lawsuit, which,
Vince made me do it. What?
yes, Vince made me do it. And here's the thing, and I said it on my last episode that Amanda Russ was on. In reality, going from a strictly HR standpoint, yes, John Laurinaitis, as a subordinate of Vince McMahon, is a victim when it comes to, sexual harassment in the workplace, because of the power, the power dynamic. But the idea being that I could, according to the lawsuit, the wording in the lawsuit, and a lot of the stuff that was talked about in there was that, Ms. Grant would be alone with Johnny Ace or John Laurinaitis on a regular basis, 2 nights a week, 3 nights a week, whatever the case may be, So if he was really saying that he's a victim, and she's alleging that all this stuff took place while they were alone, why couldn't he say, okay, well, Vince is telling us we have to do this. Let's just not and say we did, let's,
Exactly, right.
and that's, make him think we did, and, we could just go our separate ways or whatever. And it's the same thing. It's kind of the same thing with Brock Lesnar. Brock is being ostracized because of, in the lawsuit, it says that she was being pimped out, or whatever you want to term you want to use. Vince was trying to re-sign a, as it says, a W, former WWE and former UFC champion. Doesn't mention Brock by name, but put the pieces together, and that's who you have. It's the only one in history.
The only one you can point to.
Right.
It's not Ken Shamrock.
Exactly. It's not Ken Shamrock. It's not Ronda Rousey.
You're right.
But you go ahead and say, what it says is, oh, well, through Vince's text, oh, I just sent this picture him. He wants a picture of you urinating, or he wants a video of you urinating, and he's really like this, he really like that. Well, playing devil's advocate, because all this is alleged until it's proven guilty, it could have just been Vince saying that on his end, unless you see text messages between Vince and Brock. Then that evidence comes out, then all, whatever. Apparently, they, according to the text messages, according to the lawsuit, that, Ms. Grant and Brock apparently, made plans to get together, but never did because of a snowstorm. So, is that really Is there anything for Brock Lesnar to be named, and have all this heat on him? Well, let's just err on the side of caution. TKO took him, they took him out of the Royal Rumble. They're shying away from him. He was taken off the video game cover, and they're just kind of downplaying him right now. Okay, so if it comes out that he had nothing to do with it, he'll be back soon. If it
These
comes
are
out that he
commercial decisions, not legal decisions, you know?
right,
Like,
exactly.
it's well within their right to do so based on these accusations.
Exactly. The other thing that's been back in the news, and I'm getting this from MSN.com, is regarding Ashley Massaro, for the first winner of the WWE Diva Search. She didn't have a really great in-ring career, but she did go ahead and grace the cover of Playboy. She was also a big time star in the WWE.
I remember her well.
What was that?
I remember her well.
Yeah. She, unfortunately, she did end up committing suicide back in 2019, which was heartbreaking for a
Oh,
lot
yeah.
of us that were her fans. And it's like she actually just replied to one of my tweets just a week before. I remember that vividly, because she was very, very fan friendly, like that. But she did say that, she came out and said a number of years ago that she had been sexually assaulted while WWE was on one of their overseas tours in the Middle East during the Gulf War number two. And that she had been sexually assaulted by apparently somebody in the armed forces in one of the armed force hospitals by a supposed doctor, and a number of people that she claimed that she told John Laurinaitis about, and Kevin Dunn, and Vince started making certain sexual terminology in her area, and started coming on to her, wanted to be with her, on road trips, and have him, have her come to his room. So a lot of stuff is coming out now saying that, her friend, I think her name is Pippia, Kara Pippia, went on to Banfield show. I think that's on CNBC, if I'm not mistaken. But she came onto that show and basically retold the story in her words. Again, it's all hearsay, so again, it has to be proven. But it covered that, John Laurinaitis knew a lot about this. Vince knew about it. She went to Kevin Dunn. Eventually Vince started writing a lot of her, promos himself. And even though one of the writers said, Michael Hayes said, "No, you're not reading this. Who wrote it?" And she said, "Vince." He's like, "Well, those are the breaks." And he tried to downplay her career and humiliate her on her way out. Allegedly, this is something that is in the article again on MSN.com. This is a quote from Miss Pippia, who was on that show. As soon as she got back to the States, she had the phone calls. Vince had his daughter, Stephanie, take his place because she was a woman, to make Ashley comfortable. And they just played with her because everything that Stephanie had made her feel comfortable and safe about. As soon as she walked into this boardroom meeting, Ashley was on her own completely. She was threatened, and there was no compassion, there was no sympathy, there was no nothing. Again, it's third party news. It's not from Ashley herself, it's from her friend. And it's a sad, sad situation, no matter
Oh,
how you want
absolutely.
to. When it's really a situation that has to be handled in court. In a civil court, Ashley's not here to talk for herself, so we can only go based upon her her affidavits, previously. And apparently her, Ashley's previous lawyer screwed things up so she couldn't sue WWE. I think that's what it was. But again, all these new stories are coming out, and this is the one thing that I said that, Brett was actually smart saying it was that, for all he, didn't, you know, was against what happened in Montreal. He always deep down had a respect for Vince, and that's all blown out now. That's gone. He has no respect for Vince McMahon anymore. And that's the thing. Vince McMahon, in my opinion, you know, everything that's come out previously, you can kind of say, yeah, they were going after his money. But with all this stuff coming up now and all this stuff coming up at the same time, whether it's the Rita Chatterton case back in the 90s or that, you know, masseuse in Florida that it was either Florida or California that, you know, said that he, you know, tried to sexually assault her. All of these things coming up now, you're looking at, okay, there's a pattern there. So it's too much.
Listen, until it, yes, the courts are going to have to decide ultimately if this is true or false. I'm leaning toward, if I was on that jury, they can't select me because I already have an opinion. So yeah, I mean, from my point of view and perspective, as somebody who's watched the WWF since I was a fetus, there is nothing surprising about these allegations. There is nothing surprising about his potential guilt overdoing these things. I would say that the thing that shocked me the most was how extreme the text messages are. But also at the same time, I know how easy it can be for somebody in his position to completely dehumanize somebody and consider them just on the other side of a screen that they can summon every once in a while, and they aren't actually real people. I think that a person who probably took a few liberties when he wasn't a billionaire, then became a billionaire with access to so many things that he only dreamed of being able to do, because he grew up rich. He grew up rich in wrestling. Let me say that again. He grew up rich in wrestling. It is not a clean place.
No, because he did not grow up rich. He was, you know, living in a trailer park. His stepfather had abused him, you know, when he was growing up. I don't know about his mother, whether she abused him or not, but he was very, very, been very open about being abused by his stepfather. But
Is it true?
I believe it is true. I do believe it is true.
Yeah, and listen, clearly I don't know much about little tiny Vincent J. I just know, a little bit more about adult Vincent J. who bought it for $1 million. But regardless, getting into the world of, being friends with, somebody who doesn't have the best reputation in Donald Trump, and then being able to enter the world that that person has been in for so long, just, I think, definitely gives somebody the opportunity at the very least to be their worst that they could be.
No, you're exactly right, and it comes down to the point where certain people in their position, whether it's Trump or McMahon or Biden or anybody else with that kind of money, that kind of power, that kind of political gain, is that, you know, the joke about the Clintons is that if you become an enemy of the Clintons, you're, you know, you commit suicide a week later.
You're the Pine Barrens.
Yeah, exactly. The Pine Barrens. There we go. We just saw those on GH this week. But the thing is that a lot of people think they're above the law if they have enough money and they can get away with it.
To a certain degree, they are. Okay, so there's one thing that I know beyond, there's death and taxes, right? Those are the two inescapable truths. The third one is rich people live in a completely different world than we do, and we have no idea what it is. We live on the same planet. We live in the same country, same city, same states, all that kind of stuff. But we have no idea of the world that they live in.
You're right. The thing that changed that, in my opinion, is when the Me Too movement started. Now, you know, I wasn't, you know, a full supporter of the Me Too movement, you know, because there were a lot of people that, you know, that I feel based upon certain facts that came out is like, you know, you knew what you were doing, but now your career is in the toilet, so now you're going to go after somebody. But the thing is that we've seen this happen with Harvey Weinstein. You know, he wanted to get, you know, he wanted to use sex to get women, you know, to have people use sex and go, oh, hey, your mom just came in the chat room.
Oh, what a wonderful time for her to pop in. Hi, Mom.
She said, hello, people, I just popped on. That is Kat from the 10th floor, for those of you who don't know
Hi,
who that.
Mom. We're talking about how creepy Vince McMahon is.
And it's like, even bringing it back to like the wrestling storylines, if you look at the Attitude Era, or the Ruthless Aggression, more likely the Attitude Era though, you have Trish Stratus, barking like a dog on national television.
He showed you who he dreamt he could be
Yep.
on shows every night of the week.
Right.
Something that I learned, I want to say relatively recently, which I shouldn't have learned recently, but I did, was that whole $1 Million Man Ted DiBiase gimmick, how they hooked Ted DiBiase into signing on to that was if Vince could give himself a wrestling character, this is what it would be.
And it's like, going back to that, is I'll remember the story that Bruce Prichard told on Something to Wrestle, in that, he was sitting with Vince on an airplane, and this was back in the 80s when there were still smoking sections on an airplane, where literally it was one row. One row was smoking, one row was not. The
Because
guy
it
lit
doesn't
up,
travel or anything.
yeah, the guy lit up his cigarette in the smoking seat. Vince, notoriously hates smokers. So he turned around and said, "Hey, could you put that out? Could you put that out?" He's like, "No, I paid for a smoking section. I want to enjoy myself." And he just started offering him money. He said, I'll buy your seat, and I'll put $500 on top of it if you'll put that out." Eventually the guy gave in, put it out, and that was fine. And that's when Bruce said he really is the $1 Million Man. Everybody's got a
Everybody's got a
price.
price.
And you're right. If Vince, and then
Yeah.
he created the Mr. McMahon character later on, which took off like lightning.
He exaggerated himself and put himself on TV.
Yes, exactly.
It's what he did.
Your mom
Oh my
said,
God.
"Don't be a perv, it's easy."
Yeah, I mean, really, Vince, it really is. But I guess it goes back to what we were saying before, where it's that whole different world that these rich people live in, where morality and consequences are totally different. I mean, clearly, there's an amount of understanding. Ooh, the general public can't learn about this. It's not right for the public to know, but it's right for my life. And that's dangerous, you guys. That's dangerous.
Is.
And so, I mean, if you want to be fair, yeah, we're going to see what the trial says. But I mean, the court of public opinion, it's
Yes,
hard to get out of.
you're exactly right. I know it's 7:55 p.m. So those of you who are, especially on the East Central and Mountain Time, I believe, I'm not sure about the West Coast, but you'll be going over to SmackDown on Fox in about 4 minutes. But I know we might lose the viewers anyways at that point in time, but we're here on demand as always, right here on
Yes.
YouTube. So what's coming up in the future on 10th floor?
I
I've had
mean,
a
so
couple of really great interviews recently.
yeah, so I wish I could tell you the next one that's coming, but I don't know. It hasn't been arranged yet. Every once in a while I'll send some messages out and see which ones land and which ones don't. That is my entire strategy. I get lucky sometimes and sometimes I don't. January was luckiest I had ever been. Yeah, we recently had because okay, so on the 10th Floor channel, if you guys haven't been there, we do two main podcasts, both on Sunday morning. Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. Pacific time, we have Days for Dummies, which is the Days of Our Lives podcast. And then at 11 a.m. that same day, we do 10th Floor podcast, 10th Floor GH. Which is the General Hospital podcast. I host it with my mom. Since I've got a little bit of extra time now, we're trying to do a third weekly podcast as well called Late Night Tonight on Thursdays, in which we just cover whatever it is we feel like talking about. And so those are the main things that I got going on right now. If you want to head over to that channel when we're done here before you watch SmackDown, to youtube.com/10thfloorpodcast, give us a little subscribe, click around and see what's going on there. Beyond that, we'll see what shakes out for me. I don't know. I don't know. Kind
Well,
of an open and exciting time.
no, it's a good listen. He and his mom dad do a fantastic job, when they go live, and also, on the podcast as well, podcast feed. And your mom says, "What does your shirt say?" I'm not sure if she meant mine or yours. Mine is
Probably.
simply, "I'm a Paul Heyman guy."
I'm a pull him.
That's my shirt. You can get WWE shop.
Oh, Heyman.
You know,
They said when I was doing wrestling, I was a wrestling manager. I shared a picture on Twitter, 10th4GH, if
I
you
saw
want
that.
to, or X Twitter, of me with the DMW Tag Team Championships. I think they were the Action Coast Wrestling Championships at that time. So check that out because that's fun. I'm a former champion.
Yeah.
I was going somewhere with that, but then my camera distracted me, and I have no idea what it was.
So about the was a DNW
DMW
DMW.
is Devil Mountain Wrestling
Okay.
is the original, and I think the belts were carried over to Action Coast Wrestling or to East Bay Pro Wrestling or something. Because DMW Dan Hellfire, who was the booker for that, was
Okay.
done. And sometimes when you're the book and you're done, so does the alphabet that was following you. And so new alphabets were born from that, from people who wanted to continue the shows in the area. And I think they inherited those belts, and so they said DMW for a while, even though it was for a different wrestling promotion. But I was a tag team champion because we did that Freebird thing.
Yeah, okay.
I had my little stable of wrestlers. They were called the Classic Connection. It was Buddy Royal and Levi Shapiro, the original Classic Connection tag team. Oh, man, they were awesome. Check those guys out on YouTube. I think Buddy stopped wrestling, but Levi's still out there.
Okay.
Then we had Alexander G. Bernard, Perry Von Vicious, and Idris Jackson. It was a pretty large group of people, and I was their manager. We were the Classic Connection together because we all had kind of old school throwbacky type gimmicks. The Classic Connection tag team itself was very much like the Brainbusters.
Okay, yeah.
Perry Von Vicious and Alexander G. Bernard were your rich snobs, and I was out
Okay.
there doing my manager thing. And here's why I brought all this up. The comparisons that I received was very much like if you took Bobby Heenan, Jim Cornette, and Paul Heyman and like made them one person with a little bit less talent.
Yep.
That's me.
Yeah. Right.
I will never say I'm as talented as Paul Heyman. Never. Somebody else can say that though, and I'll believe him.
Well, hopefully, I'm actually hoping that Paul Heyman goes into the WWE Hall of Fame this year, being that it's in Philadelphia, the home of ECW, which I'm actually happy that I'm going to, for the first time ever, be at the ECW Arena
Hey.
in Philadelphia, WrestleMania weekend. I'm going to be going to six wrestling shows in 5 days that weekend.
That sounds awesome.
Yep, I got tickets for it's the indie organization, indie promotion that's putting on the show during WrestleCon. So that's, I'm going to that show Thursday, then Friday night SmackDown, Saturday I'm going to NXT, and then WrestleMania Night 1, Sunday's WrestleMania Night 2, and then the Monday Night Raw. So
Holy smokes.
yes, it's a bucket list item for me. I'm very happy.
That's
I'm still
awesome.
working on
That's awesome.
WWE.
Damn. I've been to two WrestleManias and a Royal Rumble. I think I went to a No Way Out
Yep.
in San Francisco. I remember this one where Eddie Guerrero won or lost the belt or won the belt.
Won the
It was
belt
when
from Brock.
Goldberg showed up.
Yeah, that
Yeah.
was No Way Out in February.
Yeah, I was there. I saw that one live. Goldberg walked by our section. I'm like, what? It's Goldberg. I went to the
Yes.
Rumble. It was Rumble 06. It was the one with the botched ending where Batista and John Cena both went over the top and Vince McMahon came out and blew his quads. I
Yep.
was there. I went to WrestleMania 19 in Seattle. That was a gift from my grandma. She drove us up from California to go hang
Oh,
out
nice.
in Seattle. WrestleMania 19. And so that was Jericho, HBK, Booker T, Triple H, Lesnar, Kurt Angle, where Lesnar landed on his head. Look at these memories I have of people getting hurt. And then I went to the WrestleMania, which I don't remember the number of it, but Sting was there. Sting versus Triple H.
Oh,
That was
WrestleMania
over in
31. That was
That was in San Jose,
Wednesday.
California, and so I was able to attend that.
Yep.
That was a good time. And that one though, I went when I was had already disconnected from being a regular watcher. And I tell you, if you're not watching every week, a lot of the spectacle of WrestleMania isn't there anymore.
But I mean that would have been a great one to be at live, especially if you're someone that grew up in the Attitude Era. simply because of Sting, Triple H, NWO, DX,
That was the
One
match I was
Ring.
looking forward to. And
Yeah.
so having Sting, Triple H, Sting versus, and of course I wanted Sting versus The Undertaker, and that didn't
Everybody
happen, but
did, yeah.
whatever. But Sting versus Triple H, and then we had the NWO come out, we had the DX moment. Like I was, I was able to get swept up in that for sure. WrestleMania 19, Piper shows up.
Yeah.
So I get it. I think that's it for pay-per-views that I've been to. No, I went to a SummerSlam. I went to the SummerSlam where DX came out on in the tank.
Okay. Yeah.
I went to that one. Feel like I went to another one too. I just can't recall. I'm not trying to boast. I'm just having a conversation. I'm sorry if I stole your thunder from your
No.
6-day week of wrestling.
No, not at all. It's always a great thing because wrestling, in my opinion, it just like soap opera. So, being that we like both of those genres of entertainment, you can pinpoint what got you into it. And as we're speaking, I do want to let everybody know if you haven't, if you didn't see my post about it, whether on Twix or on Facebook, we are coming to you live from the Maria Apicella Studios. I did, change the name of the studios in honor of my grandmother that I lost, last week. She's the one that got me into wrestling. She would, I remember back in 1989 or 88 when I had my kidney removed. I was in the children's hospital over this in December, and she would come up in the and we would watch Saturday Night's Main Event on NBC.
Oh.
And it's like I was living there with her for a while. We watched Monday Night Raw every Monday. She would come home from work at the restaurant she worked at or that she owned, and we'd watch Monday Night Raw. And she would get so, and she loved The Rock, when The Rock came out. She loved The Rock. She loved Jimmy Superfly Snuka. She got to meet a lot of them that came, to her restaurant after wrestling at the New Haven Coliseum or the New Haven Arena.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, yeah, in honor of her memory, I did name our studios as Maria Apicella Studios, because she had that impact on my life.
I mean, the mainstay on the wall here, my granny. She was also a huge supporter of wrestling. She, big old like she's from Texas, right? And so she would have all these stories of like all the local shows, Moondog Maine coming through and the Brainbusters and all that. And she had a family moving out to California when she was really young, but maintained that wrestling fandom through her grandkids because she really like supported our enjoyment of wrestling. And like I said, she was the one that got the WrestleMania ticket and took us out to WrestleMania 19 in Seattle. When I got my little wrestling career going, she was at as many shows as she could possibly attend.
Nice. Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it's a family thing, It's something that could bond families together. It's definitely things that bond friends together. I wouldn't have had the friends that I had growing up if it wasn't for our mutual love of wrestling. And so I think that that's something that help that would help somebody understand why wrestling is important to people if they don't understand why wrestling is important to people, because
Well,
it is a very social thing.
it's a very social thing, but it's also a very generational thing. Because if you look at, and here's another similarity with soap operas, in that let's say you're watching current General Hospital now. You've got the veterans on, like, whether it's Sonny or Laura or Lucy and Scott, or the people that have been there from the 80s and 70s and 80s and 90s, and then you have the newer characters on. So, you've got the draw for the older fan base, and then you've got the younger fan base in there. It's the same thing with wrestling when you have a lot of the legends, or as we look at them as legends, but they were big during our parents or grandparents' time.
Yeah.
I look at
Shoot,
legends from my
I'm getting
time.
so old that they were big during my time, and now they're the big grand return, like back when I have these experiences where like my grandma would turn something on and go, "Oh gosh, is the Rock and Roll Express still out there?" And then like now I turn it on and I'm like, "Oh my God, is that Randy Orton? What is he still doing in there?"
No, it's true. And for your information, the Rock and Roll Express is still going out there.
Oh my God.
But no, you're exactly right. And it's like I got the pleasure of, I want to say it was 5 or 6 years ago. WWE had come to, just a live event house show at, in Bridgeport, and it happened to be around my birthday in August. So I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna get a group of people that might want to go and watch, and we're gonna go down. And I bought a ticket for my grandmother and took her down. And and I really wanted to go because this was at the time where Jericho was still in WWE, but he'd only come back to do house shows. So it wasn't
Okay.
even he wasn't on Raw, wasn't on SmackDown. It was just for live events. And so I got the tickets, and I got to bring my grandmother down, and bring her to a wrestling event. And she loved it. I brought her to meet Hulk Hogan when he came, to a bookstore after he put out his first autobiography.
Okay.
We got him signed. And it was just so cute how watching her interact, because she was able to say, "Hey, do you remember so and so from the New Haven arena, or this doctor from the area?" And
Yeah.
whether he remembered or not, he still said, "Oh yeah, those were a long time ago, So it's just it is it's a
Well, that's
generation
an awesome moment. Yeah,
for a
it's
better
like
thing.
I said, it's social. It's about the memories that you form with other people, not necessarily the memories of the events that you're watching on the screen.
Exactly. Exactly right. All right. Well, I think we're gonna take off. I know that's almost gonna be your dinner time over on the West
Yeah, I
Coast.
promised James Law Jr. I'd pop onto a Zoom here too, so I gotta go like quickly throw something in my head hole and get going on that.
All right, well, have fun with James, and definitely check out 10th Floor Podcasts on Sunday. That's why we took Monday nights for Suds News, because we didn't want to compete with James and the 10th Floor, and everybody's on Sundays. We do Monday.
Everybody is on Sunday. Like you'd have to be on it Sunday at like 7 p.m. for you to
Right.
not share a time slot with somebody talking about soap operas on Sunday.
Exactly. That's what
I'm super lucky that we got started when we did and stole that 11 a.m. because that was the last hour that was remaining.
But I want to thank everybody for watching. Again, hit that like button, subscribe, get notified. Your mom said, "Good show, you two." Thank you very much, Mom and Cat. But have fun. Remember, we are an official affiliate for the WWE Shop. Go to sudsandsquarecircle.com/wrestlingmerch. Gives us the affiliate code, gives you the affiliate code and the link there. Also, follow 10th Floor on Twix and all the other social media platforms at 10th Floor GH for
Yeah, so
Twix.
that's Twitter and Instagram at 10th Floor GH. Just Google 10th Floor Podcasts. I think we're pretty much the thing that comes up when you Google that phrase now. We go 4 years strong with that branding. I think Google has finally figured out who we are. That's probably going to be your easiest way. We also have a link tree on our Twix description. I think it's on our YouTube description as well. That'll help you navigate around if you're looking for audio episodes or anything else. I haven't added a link to it in probably 3 months. I probably should, just so you know the speed that way I'm going here when it comes
Yeah.
to working with this stuff.
Absolutely. Well, Matt, it's been great. Great talking to you. We'll do it again. Maybe we'll do a watch along next time. Because that Firefly Funhouse thing was
It was a good
last one
time.
that we did was great. But next time we'll get together soon. But thank you for watching. And again, if you're in the podcast feed, give us a 5-star Apple review, or Spotify, or anywhere else you listen to your podcast. All right, Matt, have a great day. Have a great weekend. Enjoy your time on the Zoom with James Law Jr. And we will see you again soon on Squared Circle News. Have a great day, everybody.
Bye.
All right, so that's that, and